Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 17th of September, Anno Domini 2016. And you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, catch off your shoes, don't get the blues, here comes the news. And Steve was actually early. He had time to take his computer out of the bag before he said, and I'm Steve Ray. I told
it's
Michael.
Not on yet.
What?
It's not on yet, but.
Right, but it's out of the bag. All right, so Netflix has asked the United States Federal Communications Commission to declare that home internet data caps are unreasonable and that they limit customers' ability to watch online video. Netflix submitted a filing last week for the FCC's annual investigation of broadband deployment, a review that is mandated by Congress in Section 706 of the Telecommunications Act. Specifically, Congress requires the FCC to determine whether advanced telecommunications capability is being deployed to all of Americans in a reasonable and timely fashion, and to take immediate action to accelerate deployment if it's not happening to the Commission's satisfaction. The Commission's assessment generally focuses on availability and speed, but Netflix wants the Commission to add data caps to the mix. Data caps, especially low data caps, and usage-based pricing discourage consumers' consumption of broadband and may impede the ability of some households to watch internet television in a manner and an amount that they would like, Netflix wrote. For this reason, the commission should hold that the data caps on fixed-line networks and low data caps on mobile networks may unreasonably limit internet television viewing and are inconsistent with Section 706. Such a declaration wouldn't require ISPs to eliminate data caps, but it could pressure ISPs to eliminate data caps or at least offer more data before charging overage fees. In previous years, the FCC has raised the minimum speed requirement in an effort to promote faster speeds. Just how much authority Section 706 actually provides the FCC is up for debate, especially after a recent court ruling on municipal broadband that went against the commission. But Section 706 seems to provide at least some authority and specifically states that the FCC may use price cap regulation to promote broadband deployment. Netflix argued that a 300 gigabyte per month allotment is required just to meet the internet television needs of an average American without accounting for other things consumers want to do on the internet, like web browsing and downloading games and applications. The commission should recognize the data caps and usage-based pricing on fixed-line networks are an unnecessary constraint on advanced telecommunication capability, Netflix said. Netflix did not say exactly how big it thinks data caps on... Wow. I'd like to apologize to everyone for my inability to speak today.
Well, it's a cape of your data. It's wrapped around you.
Exactly. My data cape. Captain Video and his data cape. They started... We're getting a new roof, and they started at 7 o'clock this morning. I wasn't actually kind of ready for that, I'm afraid. Where was I? Oh, yeah, Netflix will not say exactly how big it thinks data caps on mobile networks should be, but argue the customers are less likely to watch online video on mobile connections when data caps are too low, and they have to pay lots of overage charges. Netflix pointed out that one of the FCC's own statements, in which the commission said it costs an average Netflix subscriber many hundreds of dollars each month to view that same Netflix programming over a wireless provider. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like to remind you, is Netflix asks the FCC to declare data caps unreasonable. And the choices are, yes, they certainly are. They should at least be higher. I don't have any right now, so I don't care. And data what now? And so far, yes, they certainly are, is number one, followed by they should at least be higher, followed by data what now? And only two of you are so selfish that because you don't have any, you don't care about anybody else. And of course, you'll have more to say about this. So if you slide down on the lower right there, scroll down to the forums, you'll see that the second forum down is the poll discussion, and currently, at least, the first topic under the poll discussion is 17 September 16. Netflix asks FCC to declare data caps unreasonable. So far, there are five posts, and it's shaping up to be a lovely little standard internet argument. So please join us there. And also, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
It's interesting that the other, many of the other internet providers that do have data caps, like Comcast, are owned by content providers. So NBC wants you to watch video over the internet and pay for it. And then when you use up your data cap on NBC-owned Comcast, they want you to pay again.
Yeah.
So Netflix is kind of in this weird position where they just want you to buy their content. And if your internet provider is slowing you down or puts a cap on it, you're not going to buy the content from Netflix as much.
Well, and that's just it. So the question becomes...
So that's a net neutrality issue a little bit
exactly.
in there,
too. So the question becomes, are internet service providers common carriers? In which case, they run under a whole different set of rules than if they're like a business, right? A standard business. So if they're a utility, if they're a common carrier, then they have a whole different set of rules. And we'll see what happens. I'm not a big fan of data caps because I know how the internet works, and I know that there are indeed fees charged all up and down the line every time you connect with another group. But they're very minimal fees compared to the number of people at the other end. And certainly $15 for a gig of data, or, you know, even $5 for a gig of data is a lot of money compared to what it costs them to provide that gig of data. And I don't mind them making money on us. I don't like them, I can't think of a polite word for it. So I won't say anything, us. And consequently, I think that, you know, people are getting tired of data caps. And of course, now particularly, and we're actually catching this. We've got 10 more days on our Verizon thing for the month, and we seem to have run out of data. Most months we use less than half of it. Somehow this month, and I think it's, frankly, my daughter finding Pokemon, but she insists not.
One of the things that I've been remarking lately is at the office, we just switched over to T-Mobile.
Uh-huh.
And the smaller carriers, you know, T-Mobile and Sprint, and then, you know, like Cricket and Straight Talk and those smaller carriers, they're offering unlimited. So, no data cap, but if you do go over 26 gigs, they slow you down.
Right.
Okay, but you're not capped.
Right.
But the big carriers, AT&T and Verizon, have mobile caps. What, 5, 10, you know, 5 gigs on your plan and then 10
That's whatever your plan is.
Right,
ours is actually lower than that.
Yeah. And so it's interesting. So the smaller carriers can give away, you know, free data for their plans.
But that's because the smaller carriers are trying to lure people to their...
Right. Well, yeah, they have to differentiate themselves.
Right.
But the fact that they can and still make money means that the other guys could too. But
well,
they won't make as much money.
Well, and that's the thing. It used to be that I had unlimited data on Verizon. And I when they changed my plan on me, not that I wanted it changed, they changed it. My habits changed drastically. I don't listen to Pandora anymore, so they don't get my money. Spotify doesn't get my money. Laffly doesn't get my money. Netflix, I don't watch over the air anymore. I only do it at home. So because I figured out what it would cost me, and it would be a ridiculously large sum of money a month.
Yeah, I have Sprint, so I don't have to worry about that. But on the flip side, I do have to worry about losing coverage in occasional spots.
Right.
We have to worry about that with T-Mobile, too. Occasionally, there's dark spots. And that's always the counter argument, that AT&T and Verizon need to charge that much because they're putting up more towers. Which is another issue I've always found stupid, is that companies can't share towers. So instead of putting up one tower that all the carriers can use, Every carrier has to put up their own towers, and that slows down expansion. If you could put up one tower for all four carriers, you could quadruple your tower placements.
Right.
And the speed you're getting your towers out.
Right. But, of course, that would mean that they don't have an edge. They don't have an advantage, the ones that can afford to put more towers out. So I get it. I mean, you know, if I were Verizon, I would be reluctant to get rid of data caps too. But the reality is that you can't both have the data caps and say you're serving your customers' best interest, because you're kind of not at that point.
Well, what was the other Weasley word they used about as part of the network neutrality argument? It wasn't data shaping. It was... Basically, you know, we have to slow you down to help manage our network. We're not intentionally slowing you down to be spiteful. We have to do it to manage our network.
Right. And my counter argument to that is I used to manage a network.
and you don't.
And you're an idiot if you think that's true. I'm sorry, it's just not accurate. At least it's not. A Batman episode? Straighten that out. There you go.
Well, if I straighten the camera out, the picture's crooked. So I have to have the camera crooked to make the picture straight.
Okay, that's fair.
And then I got to get Mike on the other camera.
Right.
But Google Hangouts is annoying me again.
I don't think it's Google Hangouts. I think it's this network.
Maybe.
Good chance.
Everything else works.
Yeah, I think it's this network.
Yeah, there's a good chance of that.
The error message says check your proxy settings.
Right, because you're going through the proxy here. Do you want to be wired in?
Yeah, let me try the wire.
This is great radio. Yeah.
And I have the password for the proxy
wire
server.
Wire me up, Zippy.
I'm just wondering if Google Hangouts is filtered differently through the proxy server.
That's very possible,
because it's it could be high bandwidth video. That's the point of it,
right? Because our studio is in the Greece building, the school building.
We have to abide by their rules,
right? And that's fair. You know, you don't want kids being on Facebook all day and everything else. So, yeah, I get it. I do. But,
Facebook and YouTube are filtered. But the, Hangouts, I guess they had a forward-thinking enough system admin that someone could use Hangouts.
Yeah, someone could. So see if that does it for you now. Turn off your Wi-Fi and...
Sometimes I have to restart the Hangout in order to make it work again.
Right. Anyway, that's our talk on data caps. It just seems to me that, yes, I understand that your network gets used more, but it's not like a car. There is no physical wear and tear on your network. What it does mean is that if you get a lot of people doing a lot of data usage on your network, then they will, in fact, start colliding and slowing things down if you have more than 100 people on a particular cell tower.
So now we have to put in more towers and
more
lines.
But now you have to put in more towers. And I do understand that. But the way to do that is to actually bite the bullet and put in more towers, not make us stop using the network because you don't want to pay the money to put up more towers. It seems to me that what they're doing is solving the problem at the wrong end.
And even Netflix has run into that at the other end, that with most internet providers, there's what's called a peering agreement. So if I go to a website, I don't care who their internet provider is.
Right.
So say I use Time Warner at this end, it might go through Comcast in the middle and may end up at Cox at the other end.
Right.
They all just basically say, okay, I'll take your data if you take my data.
Right, because it all works out.
It works out even, right. But Netflix is a different animal, because you send a little tiny request to Netflix and they send you gigabytes of data. So it's asymmetrical. So all of the ISP carriers have started demanding Netflix pay them extra, because it's not two-way symmetric data. And so what Netflix starts doing is they basically put a mirror server inside the ISP's office.
Right.
So say here in Rochester, you ask for a Netflix picture, it may come from Mount Hope Avenue.
Right.
It may not have to come all the way from California.
Right.
Which makes sense for Netflix and latency and bandwidth. And but now Netflix has to pay that, and that, and that's probably one of the reasons why their rate has gone up.
Right.
Because they have to now pay the ISPs for the privilege of being on the internet. Now, what about us? If we weren't already on a public broadcasting station that has licenses to broadcast anyway,
right?
We may have to pay internet providers to carry our video if we want people to see us on the internet,
right?
And so, how many small businesses have been stifled because they can't afford, you know, these god awful internet? In fact, I remember hearing This Week in Tech with Leo Laporte, one of my favorite networks. You know, it's an internet TV network with 20 different shows. They used to say their internet bill was $20,000 a month. And AOL was one of their big sponsors, you know, paying that because AOL has a lot of backbone internet pipes. So if you had to pay $20,000 a month for your internet service so that your customers could watch your video, you'd be very annoyed.
Yes. Yes, you would. And
at a minimum.
Right. And that's part of the argument that the FCC is putting forth, which is that one of their mandates is to see to it that innovation and industry can move forward without artificial barriers.
Right.
And so they're saying what they're saying is that those data caps are artificial barriers. And I guess we'll see. You know, it depends on, at some point it'll go to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court will make a decision. We've already seen a state beat the FCC, but we'll see what else happens. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with just Steve Ray and Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 21 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And, of course, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415. We're trying to set the system up, and Steve is working diligently on that.
That's a larger error, at least.
it's a different error every time we look at it, so I don't know quite what's going on there. But
and then sometimes it just magically works. That's the way computers are. Sometimes they just magically work.
Sometimes they, and it is magic, actually. So we'll have to see how that plays out. He's working hard at making that happen. And like I said, Michael is taking a call at the moment. So you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And we will be happy, if not actually delighted, to take your calls and put you on the air. Currently we have Cornelius from Rochester, New York. Hi, Cornelius. What's up?
Hi there, Nick. I have my wife, I was on a business trip out of town, went downstairs, and called me up horrified by the number of computers that I've got sitting around down there. just so you'd appreciate the situation. It turned out that I had a problem which I was trying to solve, and so I set up and went looking for files in a bunch of old ones, but I need to get rid of these things. I've got at least three desktop-type PCs and a fax machine and two printers that I need to get rid of. And so I looked in, they looked on the web, and there was a bunch of people talking about taking them, et cetera. I wanted to know if you guys would recommend some charitable organization that might actually want or be able to use these.
Not offhand, but many times your local community center or churches will, especially if they're working, will take them to use. We used to talk about Edison Tech taking old computers for their computer programs where the kids would learn how to use them and take them apart and fix them. I'm not sure if they,
I mean,
they do that
these
anymore.
Two are running XP, the other one's running Server 2003.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I don't know if they could be upgraded, and I certainly am not going to bother to do that. That's my outstanding problem is that Windows 10 doesn't work for anybody that's using USB SEER, which is the good old way of making a USB port look like a serial port. They rewrote it.
Yeah.
I can't get it to work, and nobody else can get it to work apparently anymore.
There is a recycling company in town at ewaste.com. They can recycle the old computers. And many times there will be businesses, I think the zoo just had one a few weeks ago, the businesses that will have a recycling day where you can take your computers to recycle it, and then part of the proceeds go to that business or charity.
And we used to have a page on the Soundbites website, but it was so out of date, I finally took it down. But if somebody wants to give us a call and get back on that page, you can email me.
What was the name of that you mentioned to me? You were garbled a little bit.
Ewaste.com.
Ewaste. Got it. Yep. Okay. Got it.
And they do responsible recycling. You can. They have offices downtown and in Victor if you just want to drop it off directly with them.
Yep.
But they often have.
They are the company I've used before.
Yeah.
The one in Victor, I guess, has become them, right?
Yeah, it's Regional Computer Recycling and Recovery,
yep.
But ewaste.com is easier.
Yeah, all right?
Okay.
Yep.
So, I'll almost certainly do business with them.
Yeah.
All right,
okay,
excellent, thanks.
You guys don't know anything about the Microsoft's recoding of USB or SIS, do you?
Oh, by the way, before you go off the air, I just got a call that just said that there is a recycling event coming up at Bishop Kearney High School.
Okay, when is that going to be?
I think the caller that came in said sometime next week.
I'll be out of town again. I kind of need to know the date. I'll be out of town Tuesday night through Thursday at some god-awful hour in the middle of the night.
All right, we'll see. I don't see anything on their website unless it's this fundraiser.
September 24th at 8 a.m.
Oh, there you go. Oh, you found it.
24th.
Recycling, so 8 a.m. to 1 p.m.
24th is, it's next Saturday.
Cool.
So yes, that's not a problem. I can wait and do that then.
Yep.
That's no problem. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks. And thank you, whoever called about Bishop Kearney as well. Thank you very much.
Okay. And a lot of times, if you check with your town, a lot of the towns do their own recycling and will have recycling events as well.
Yeah. And that's always a good thing to do with your computer. There are toxic components in a computer, and so that's kind of nice. And our next caller is George from Virginia. We're in Virginia.
Vienna, Virginia.
Vienna, how are things in lovely Vienna?
Well, the weather's fine. Got no complaints, just a complaint about my computer.
Give us an idea of what the problem is.
Okay, I'm running Windows 10 on a Dell computer that's about a year old, and the command line, or whatever they call that line at the bottom of the screen.
Where the little icons go?
Yeah, I occasionally get a blue and yellow flashing shield that inhibits my ability to do anything. I can't click on anything. I can't do anything, and it gives me a bong bong every time I try to use the mouse. And when I Googled, and I can remedy the situation by powering off the computer with the power button. And when I Google the problem, there's like 87 different theories about what causes that, and I don't see any solutions. So I'm hoping you can maybe help me.
The first thing is to figure out what program that is. That could be the Microsoft Security Advisor advising you there's something wrong in your computer. Have you tried clicking on that shield icon?
Yes, and it won't. Nothing happens. It makes a noise, like an alarm noise, bong.
Try Command-Tab to switch to a different window. There may be a window in front of everything that it wants you to click on.
Ah, Command-Tab.
So just in case there's a window. And does the rest of the screen get dim when this happens?
No, not at all.
So it's not the user access control.
No. And apparently the problem is fairly widespread because, as I say, when you Google blue and yellow flashing shield, blah, 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 you get a lot of theories and a lot of solutions. And the other clue is it seems to come after an update. So
it may be the Microsoft security program telling you there was an update.
What's happening is you've got a task that's asking for consent from the administrator.
Right.
generally speaking, if you didn't start something, that's bad, and it probably means you've got some sort of virus or other issue.
So I might, if it's the Windows update wanting his attention to do something, that it may not be.
Well, but if you can't click on it, right. So my suggestion would be that you reboot your system. Well, that you dance the security tango, basically.
Okay. I have on board the McAfee security suite, which I've been pretty happy with. Would there be any conflict between your security tango does and what would be on the McAfee?
No, you don't have to download the antivirus pieces. Well, you don't have to download any piece that you already have a McAfee thing for. So really, it's mostly a process to go through, and I give people a bunch of software choices if they don't have them. But if you've already got them, use those. It's a process to go through to clean out your machine.
Yeah.
So if something is indeed asking for administrator access and it's not something you started, it may be something legit, but it is unlikely because otherwise you would indeed be able to click on that flashing shield.
Yeah.
Down in the button bar, and you'd be able to do whatever it says.
Okay, I'll give it a try.
In the meantime, because nobody ever does this stuff immediately, you should be able to, as Steve said, go to the task manager and delete the task that's asking for consent.
Okay, I'll give that a try.
There you go.
Thank you very, very much. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. And have fun down there in Virginia.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a bunch of people who are having a similar problem, and man, the only thing you can do is clean your machine. Now, the question becomes, of course, what's causing that? If it's a rootkit, then the security tango is not going to make it easy to fix, but if it's something else, it certainly should be possible. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Tim from Webster, New York. Welcome, Tim. What's up?
Yeah, hi guys. My hard drive is just overloaded, and I'm struggling with how to free it up a bit. I do an awful lot of video production and stuff like that. So what I used to always be able to do is just delete a lot of the video content, put it on an external hard drive, and it would free up loads of space. Now, I've gotten to the point where even though I've removed countless videos, I run the Super Anti-Spyware for like cookies and stuff like that. I can't figure out for tree size 3. I've spent time on it, and it's just such a struggle. And even though I've removed countless videos, it doesn't seem like there's hardly any on there. I still am in jammed up, not able to seemingly free up any more space, and I don't know what to do.
Have you emptied the recycle bin after putting stuff in?
Yeah, I always do that too.
In TreeSize Free, there are two commands. There's a run as administrator command. You may need to do that instead of just run, because that will show you all the hidden files that the typical user can't see, but administrators can.
Now, I did see that on YouTube. I did see someone talk about exactly that. I'm a pretty smart guy, but gosh, I was looking at the tree and trying to still decipher. It's not showing me exactly how much space each thing is hogging up, and then sometimes I'm like, I don't even know what that is, and I don't dare get rid of it because I don't know what it is.
Well, TreeSize 3 sorts everything by the amount of space it's using. So the stuff at the top is using the most space, and it should tell you how much space it's using.
That's right. I remember that.
Yeah. But if it's in a folder you don't know what it is, that can be bad.
Right.
So if
at this point you've got to do some detective work, I'm afraid.
Okay.
Right. So that means going down through your list and then opening all those folders and seeing what's actually in them.
And if you don't recognize a folder name, then try Googling that folder name and maybe it's a Microsoft System folder that you shouldn't mess with.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
But if you've got something that's gigabytes full, it's really unlikely to be a Microsoft folder.
Right. That's what I thought. So what, in your opinion, tends to hog up the most room? Because we know video content does.
Well, it depends on what it is that you've been doing with your machine. If you get a lot of content, for example, if people send you video files over your email, those are probably downloaded to your machine and therefore taking up a bucket load of space.
That also can be Windows update files. Windows keeps the old update files in case you ever want to roll back. There is somewhere, I don't remember, what Windows version are you running?
10.
7.
Oh, 7?
Yeah.
If you right-click on my computer and do properties, there is something called the Disk Cleanup Wizard. You may have already run that. That will delete your temporary internet files, that will delete your cache files, and it will let you delete the Windows update files if you don't think you're ever going to want to roll back.
That does sound familiar. It's called the Cleanup Wizard?
So, yeah, Disk Cleanup, I think, is what it calls it.
Right.
Disk Cleanup. Okay. Okay. I'll run with this now and see what I can do. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, I would start with the Disk Cleanup Wizard because that's semi-automatic. Then I would look at my email, and if indeed you've got, you know, video files or whatever. We get that a lot from people who you know, they get 70, 90, 100 pictures of their grandkids.
Right.
And suddenly their drives are filling up. Well, because they've got them, they've pulled them into another folder, so now they've got two copies on their machine, and they're taking up twice as much space.
You think pictures can be that substantial as compared to video?
Not so much.
Right.
No.
Not individually.
Right.
But if you end up getting hundreds or thousands of them, and as Nick said, you get them in your email, and then you save them. You know, to your pictures folder, they're actually now on your computer twice. They're once in the email downloads, and they're in the folder you saved them in.
Can you run that part by me one more time?
When you get a file attachment in your email, like a picture, your email program stores it in the email downloads folder, which is usually separate from the rest of the system. Or it may just store it as part of the email database.
Right.
So then when you save that picture, say in your pictures folder, there's now two copies of it. One in the email and one in the pictures folder. You would have to delete that email message and then empty your email trash in order for that email copy to be removed. But a lot of people like keeping their email around, so now suddenly that can be bigger.
This is a new concept to me. Email downloads folder, because I thought there was a separate server.
Well, there is a separate server until you download it to your machine so you can view it.
Oh.
Right? Once you have viewed it, it's got to be on your machine to view it. Now, if you're, for example, if you're using Google Photos, that when you view a picture, it comes down to your browser cache, which gets cleaned out every once in a while. It can only be so big.
Right.
There's no so big for your email folder.
Right.
So stuff just accumulates and accumulates and accumulates and accumulates, and you may have, you know, 5,000 pictures in there.
How can I find that email downloads folder?
Well, you don't find the folder because depending on 100 different factors, and I can't go through them all now, could be anywhere.
Okay.
What you do is you verify that you have a copy of a picture or a video you want, and then you delete the email, and then you empty your trash.
Oh.
Your mail tray, the email trash.
Even if it's Yahoo?
Even if it's Yahoo, because in order to view that thing, it has to come down to your machine.
Okay.
It has to.
Okay. That makes sense.
And if you're using Yahoo Webmail, or do you have an app for your email, like Outlook or Windows Live Mail? Or
I guess it would be Webmail, yeah.
Webmail. So that would be somewhere in your email cache. No, I'm sorry, your web cache.
That should be in your web cache. You might try cleaning out your web cache.
Okay.
And sometimes the automatic cache clean button. So, like, you know, in Chrome or Firefox, right, there's an empty cache. Sometimes it doesn't get it all.
Okay.
And then you have to manually find the cache folder and delete it, which is tricky
annoying,
too.
But I would, you know, I would start with the things Dave was talking about. Do Steve was talking about. Do the tree free tree size. And,
as administrator is the trick with tree size.
As administrator.
Okay.
And take a look at other stuff. Now the other thing it could be, and this is very unlikely, but it could be that your machine has been captured as part of a botnet, and therefore, right?
That happened to a friend of mine. He made a test account to play with something, and the username was test, and the password was test, and he forgot about it. And then a week later, he found 10 gigabytes of illegal movies on his computer.
Yep, being served to somebody else through his system.
Or it's so many possibilities. Your hard drive could be dying. And the space is being lost due to bad blocks that are being removed from use by the operating system.
Okay.
But you would see the size of the drive.
Yeah, well, he might not have looked.
That's true.
Do a properties on your drive and see how big it thinks it is anymore.
Right.
Okay. All right. That's good stuff. I'll take it and run with it. Thanks for your time.
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
We see that a lot on tablets and the iPads that our customers will bring to us. It's full because they got pictures on their email or messages. Someone messaged you a picture.
Right.
You save it in your pictures folder. You now have two copies of it.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 43 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 47 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and you can join us. Give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Now, I alluded earlier to talk about the FCC. We actually talked about the FCC and local communities. We talked a little bit about that. On Tuesday, Representative Ann Eshoo, a Democrat of California, proposed legislation that will allow cities and towns to build their own internet services, even in states that have laws restricting municipal broadband. Eshoo's Community Broadband Act of 2016 comes a month after the states of North Carolina and Tennessee won a federal appeals court ruling preserving laws preventing municipal broadband providers from expanding outside their territories. The Federal Communications Commission has tried to overturn the laws, which remain in place in about 20 states. I'm disappointed that a recent court ruling blocked the FCC's efforts to allow local communities to decide for themselves how best to ensure that their residents have broadband access, as Eshoo said in an announcement. Rather than restricting local communities in need of broadband, we should be empowering them to make the decisions they determine are in the best interest of their constituents. Too many Americans still lack access to quality, affordable broadband, and community broadband projects are an important way to bring this critical service to more citizens. Eshoo said that powerful special interest in state capitals, generally ISPs, who lobby against municipal broadband, have played a big role in denying communities the ability to make their own telecommunications decisions. Eshoo said she modeled her bill after one introduced by Senators Frank Lautenberg, Democrat of New Jersey, and John McCain, Republican of Arizona, in 2005. Eshoo's Community Broadband Act says that states may not prohibit any public provider from providing advanced telecommunications capability to any person or any public or private entity. The Eshoo bill would also protect private ISPs from discriminatory regulations. Local governments that offer their own internet service would not be allowed to make rules that favor the public broadband service over private ones. The bill probably doesn't have much chance of passing as long as both chambers of Congress are controlled by Republicans, but it shows that the battle over municipal broadband is not over despite the FCC's loss in court. So, do you think cities should be able to make build their own internet services? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
We've seen several cities around the country where the city has tried to put their own municipal wireless in, not wireless, Wi-Fi, and the local internet providers, Comcast, have sued the city to stop it for a restraint of trade. You know, if the city sells you Wi-Fi, you may not buy it from us.
Somebody's hurting our profits. We must destroy them immediately.
Exactly.
Competition should be good.
You would think so.
Well, no, it's good for consumers, but it drives the prices down for companies.
Right.
Which is bad.
Right. Right. Bad for them.
Bad for them, yep.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Don from Greece, New York. Hiya, Don, what's up?
Why, good afternoon, gentlemen. Windows 7. Trying to do the Windows update. It's a computer that hasn't been turned on for like a year. I do Windows update, and it's been sitting here since like 8 o'clock this morning, checking for updates.
Yes. You have to run the update for Windows update before Windows update can update.
Okay.
There is a change. Microsoft changed the way Windows update works, and so if you have an old computer that didn't have the Windows update, it can't get to Windows update. I have a link I am looking for here. So the first thing you have to do is manually download Windows Update, the new version of Windows Update. Then Windows Update will work.
Really?
And I am posting the link. So this link, updated September 13th at Microsoft. So there's two different KB numbers depending on which version of Windows you're running. And so once you get the new version of Windows Update loaded, then Windows Update will be able to find the
update.
The rest of the updates. So this goes back. It's one of the annoyances we've had with Windows for years. You install Windows 7 fresh from disk, then there's 104 updates, and you restart, and then there's 117 updates, and then you restart. But that doesn't work anymore because they changed the way Windows Update works. They did release an update to Windows Update, but you have to have already had those updates installed.
Okay. Well, that explains why it's just been sitting here doing nothing, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. You did a post.
I'm posting that link now.
Follow that?
Yes.
It'll be up in just a couple of minutes.
Very good. Keep up the good work, gentlemen. Yep.
Thank you, Don.
All right. Have a good one.
You too.
And, of course, we like the alliteration. You have to update Windows Update before Update can update.
Right. It's a tricky situation. But what happened, of course, was that Windows 10 came along. And the way Windows 10 does things is different from the way Windows 7 does things. And so they had to make a change in the way Windows 7 does things before we could get Windows 10 to do things.
They're actually changing the way they're going to start rolling out updates for Windows 7, 8, 1, and 10. They're moving to the 10 model. So normally, like I just said, you install Windows 7 and there's 104 updates. Now, what they're going to do, I think starting in October, they're going to bundle all the updates together into one file.
Right.
And then in November, they're going to add more updates into that one file. So if you skip October, you can install November and you get all of October's updates. So you don't have to update and then update and then update and then update. So they're in essence bundling all the updates together into a single file. So it doesn't matter when you install it, you get them all. You should install them all anyway.
Right.
But for like the previous callers, computer hasn't been turned on in a year. There's hundreds of updates waiting that it would have to download individually. So there's advantages to doing that. No matter when you check for updates, you're going to get them all. It does mean that each update is going to be bigger and use more of your broadband and run into your data cap.
Right, exactly.
See how everything's related?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Webster, New York. Larry, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I'm an illiterate computer user. on my unit, instead of hitting restore, I went for recovery, and I wiped out all my goodies. So I went to Revo, and I found the files that I really needed, but when I went to get them, it said that they were corrupted.
Yep, they were replaced by the recovery you did.
Okay, is there any way that I can possibly get them back, salvage them?
Not that I've ever heard of. Once overwritten them, which is what you did with recovery.
Restore from your backup is the usual way to do it.
Right, unless you have a backup, there's nothing that can be done. I'm sorry.
Of course I didn't pay them off.
Of course you didn't, will from now on.
There are some forensic companies that might be able to recover the deleted files even after they've been overwritten, but it's not cheap. Several thousand dollars we typically see.
They're not that good.
Yeah, that's what we usually hear.
Yeah. It's cheaper to back up.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay,
sorry. Guys, thank you.
Yep,
sorry.
Well, fine.
So, everyone, right now, while you're listening to the show, and don't pay attention to your computer, run your backup program. Get a $100 external USB hard drive. Very cheap. Plug it in, run your backup. If you're running a home business, you should have several backups, and they should, at least one should be outside your home.
There are so many free and inexpensive cloud storage places nowadays that there is no excuse for not backing up to the cloud, as well as an external device on your network, not on your computer, on your network.
Which also is handy if you have multiple computers. You back them all up to that one network device.
Right. So I have a 3 gig drive that my wife and I both back up to automatically. every day. So, in addition to other things, but it's on the network, so we can both reach it. We each have our own individual place on the network that we store things, so we're not overwriting each other, essentially two different folders. And the way this particular one works, I can't see her stuff, she can't see my stuff. But that wasn't a requirement for us, but it's the way that one works out. But they're easy to set up in general. You just attach them to the network and you're most of the way done. Now you just have to run maybe a little utility on your computer to connect to it. But once you've done that, you're done. And everything is working and everything is up and running. And then your automatic backup program, of which we've talked about a dozen on this show, will be able to back up on that system. And then you don't have to worry about it anymore. You know, I recently lost my desktop machine. It was gone. I got up one morning and it was off. And I tried to turn it on and it would not turn on again. And I changed the power supply, but the power supply was good. It was the hard drive that was just dead. So there was no retrieving anything from it. And in point of fact, everything had backed up. So except for one file that I'd been working on the day before, because I tend to back up at 3 a.m. and the computer apparently died before 3 a.m.
And we hear from a lot of people that say, oh, yeah, I drag my files onto a flash drive. Well, when was the last time you did that? Oh, about 6 months ago. Okay, you've just lost 6 months' worth of data.
Mm-hmm.
You should have an automatic backup program that does it by itself, so you don't have to remember to do it. You don't have to remember what files you changed. It does it for you. There's a commercial backup service called CrashPlan. Most of the online backup services are in the $5 a month range, so yep. they're pretty inexpensive. But CrashPlan has a neat option where you can back up to a friend's computer on the internet and let them back up to your computer. So you hang that hard drive on your computer or your network, and then you have an offsite backup because it's at your friend's house. Everything is encrypted, so they couldn't get into it if they wanted to. But generally, you want it to be a friend you trust.
You're right.
But yeah, so you have a free offsite cloud backup stored on someone else's computer, which is basically what the cloud is, just someone else's computer. But that gets it offsite. So a lot of people will have the backup hard drive next to their computer. And if there's a fire, flood, theft, you lose your computer and your hard drive. So having something offsite in another building, you know, detached garage even, lets you have that peace of mind. Especially, as I mentioned earlier, with home businesses. So many people are running home businesses these days, and your entire business runs on that computer. You should have some backups, and probably even a backup computer, and including a backup drive.
Exactly. You can't have too many backups. All right, that's it for this hour. You've wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense, but we're going to give you the opportunity to do it again. So we're going to take a slightly longer break, but we'll be back with a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you hurtling headlong into our 28th year on the air and with sound bites on the truly great and solely member supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Sound Bites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Sound Bites, right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. And you can join us here online. Just give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or if you are outside the 585 area code, you can give us a call at 1 800 1-800-990-0415 on our toll-free line. That'll be good. And, oh, here we go. Speaking of Microsoft updates, Microsoft did, in fact, release one of its biggest security updates this year, fixing 50 vulnerabilities in its products and 26 more in Flash Player, which is still bundled with its Edge browser.
It's one program. How can there be 26 errors in it?
It's Flash. 26 is a very low number. I look at 26, right. I look at 26 and think they missed some.
Yeah.
The patches are split into 14 security bulletins, 7 of which are rated critical. They address vulnerabilities in Windows, Internet Explorer, Microsoft Edge, Microsoft Exchange, Microsoft Office, Microsoft Office Web Services, Flash, and apps. That is to say, everything you run. For desktop deployments, people should prioritize the fixes for Internet Explorer, Microsoft Edge, Office Graphics, Microsoft Graphics Component, OLE automation for VB Scripting Engine, and Adobe Flash Player. That's because these vulnerabilities can be exploited to achieve remote code execution by tricking users to visit compromised websites or to open specifically crafted files. These are two of the most common infection vectors used in malware attacks. One of the Internet Explorer and Edge vulnerabilities could be used for information disclosure in an exploit chain. Microsoft notes in its advisory that although this vulnerability has not been publicly disclosed, it has been exploited. It is a zero-day vulnerability. People were using it before anybody knew about it. So, although it's not been disclosed, it's actually been exploited. The company did not, however, provide any more information about the attacks leveraging it. The security update for Silverlight should also be prioritized, even though it's rated as only important rather than critical. The patched vulnerability could also lead to remote code execution if a user visits a compromised website that contains a specially crafted Silverlight application. On the server side, administrators should focus on the update for Microsoft Exchange, which patches critical vulnerabilities in Oracle Outside In technology. This is a collection of software development kits that can be used to extract, normalize, scrub, convert, and view unstructured file formats. Oracle released a patch for these flaws in July, and Microsoft has now imported those fixes. The Oracle OIT vulnerabilities can be exploited to achieve remote code execution. Again, that's the holy grail, by the way. If they can remotely execute code on your system, they win. By simply sending an email with a specially crafted attachment to a vulnerable Exchange server. The Office update should also be on server administrators' radar because it applies to Microsoft SharePoint Server 2007, 2010, and 2013, and the flaws it covers could allow attackers to take complete control of such servers by using the Word and Excel automation service. Server administrators should also look at the update for Microsoft Graphics Component, which affects Windows servers, and an MS-16-110, which applies to Server 2008 and 2012 and allows attackers with domain user accounts to create a specially crafted request causing Windows to execute arbitrary code with elevated privileges. So, did you update? How did it go? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
We always say you should run the updates as often as you can, but wait a week, maybe. Let someone else come out with the problems first. In fact, with the iOS 10 update that came out on Tuesday, by Tuesday afternoon, 10.01 had come out to fix some of those bricking problems.
Right. There was, and that's, I think, an important consideration. When you have critical updates, the impulse is to do it immediately, and that's not a bad impulse at all. Quite frankly.
Yeah.
But when you have so many updates covering so many things, it's never a bad idea to let somebody else be the pioneer and let you have a little downtime before you actually do the installation. Yep.
And the day it's announced, you know, especially this was a big anticipatedly waited? No. I can't. You're rubbing off today.
Highly anticipated
release of iOS 10. I'm guessing there were, 100 million, 200 million people downloading? It's a gig and a half. No matter how many caching servers they have all over the world, it's not enough. And I was hearing complaints about how slow it was to download. Yes, you and 100 million other people are trying to download this file. And there was also watchOS and tvOS all were released on the same day.
Right.
So it's, yeah, it's going to be slow. Wait a couple of days and it will come down really fast. Or let it run overnight. But I guess you have to be on the bleeding edge of everything, right?
Well, I did wait, and it still took, and I'm on green light, and it still took about an hour and a half to download.
Yeah. So maybe there were only 50 million people doing it.
Yeah, right. Right. So I knew it wasn't my connection. It was clearly the other end.
And they're using Akamai. If you look into the URLs, they're using Akamai, which is the best caching server on the internet.
Right. Right. But, yeah, so definitely make sure you stay up to date. And as always, for heaven's sake, before you do an update, do a backup. I can't say that enough times. I cannot say that enough times. Before you do an update, do a backup. If you're doing automated backups, as we spoke of earlier with Larry, then you absolutely are okay. But if you're not doing automated backups, at the very least, before you do an upgrade, do a backup. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Paul from Brighton, New York. What's up, Paul?
Yeah, I've got two questions. First, I'm getting these dialog boxes that keep popping up saying, on the top, it says compressed zip folder. Please insert the last disk of the multi-volume set and click OK to continue. I can cancel it and get rid of the box, but then it comes back again after a little while.
I have not seen that particular...
That's like a flashback from the 90s right there.
Yeah, no kidding.
Back in the olden days, you used to have to install software on multiple floppy disks.
Right.
And then someone figured out that you could zip each floppy disk and send the zip files down on one CD. So something you installed recently is looking for the next zip file in the
list.
I'm running
Windows 10.
What have you installed recently?
Windows 10.
Yeah, it wouldn't be Windows 10 itself. Something is looking for that compressed zip folder. But you know, now you're again back to detective work. I don't know what to tell you. You might be able to look at the task manager.
Okay.
Right. If you right click on the button bar at the bottom and then look at task manager, you may be able to look at the running tasks and figure out which one that is. But I don't know what else to tell you beyond that.
It doesn't give you the name of the thing it's trying to install.
Yeah, up in the blue bar, it doesn't give you
nothing like that. Just the words that I just told you, and you know, I never saw this before when I was running Windows 7. Never saw it before.
Right.
I've never, you know, used what they call here a multi-volume set. It's just something I haven't seen before. Okay. My second question is: I got this email from a nationally known computer savant. You've all heard of her. And anyway, she forwarded this.
This the word savant threw me, but go ahead.
Anyway, she, as part of her routine email thing, this thing is called SparkTrust, which she recommends that you install.
SparkTrust?
Yes, but I've seen things on the web that suggest it might be malware. It's supposedly a utility to help get rid of programs that are slowing down your computer.
My guess is it's a fake email using her name trying to get you install this malicious software.
I guess that's a possibility.
Yeah, it may not have been her at all, but okay. I will tell you, I run a program, I run a an add-on in my web browser called Web of Trust, W-O-T. And what it does is for every link in my page, it puts a little circle, a green one if it's good, a yellow one if it, or a gray one if it's unknown, and a red one if it's malicious. And everything for SparkTrust is red.
Yep.
Everything.
If you go to their website, they say they're expert in virus removal software, and they're a Microsoft partner.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I can copy that.
Yeah, I can copy that logo too. Yeah.
Yeah. And Vladimir Putin says he's an honest guy. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. So basically, I would suggest that you delete that email with extreme prejudice.
Okay.
There's a lot of those cleaning programs that are out that claim to clean up your computer.
Yeah.
And at a worst, they do nothing. No, I guess at best they do nothing.
Right, at best worst, they do nothing.
Yeah, at worst, they'll steal your money and sell your credit card information to other people.
Yeah. They look so professional, though. I give them credit for their graphics, you know, interface and appearance.
Oh, yeah, they've got the best people, absolutely.
Okay, well, thanks for the tip again.
All right, thank you, and well done by being a little bit cautious there.
Yeah, I've been burned before, things like this. Thank you.
Yep.
Right.
Thanks. And for the rest of you, that's a little moral lesson. Don't trust it just because it came in email. Even if it came from somebody you think you know.
It's frustrating because you can't trust any message that appears on your computer. You don't know if it's legitimate or not.
Right.
And so it becomes dangerous. So people are ignoring messages they should acknowledge. You know, Windows Update found a problem. You need to update. Okay. How is that different from the fake Windows Update message or the fake Flash Update message? It's very, very difficult now. And there's been a surge recently in fake phone calls. People calling you from tech support, you know, at Apple or Microsoft or Google and saying there's a problem on your computer. I've been reading these cute stories about people who see how long they can string them along.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, my God. You know, it's terrible. Okay, what should I do? Go to the start menu. What's that? It says start on. Oh, I have to turn my computer on?
Yeah, right. Well, I'll tell you what. It's an interesting issue. I must say the Security Tango is clearly getting more popular.
Yeah.
Because I get Google alerts for Security Tango, and I'm seeing the name pop up on all kinds of places. And they all start out with, you know, Security Tango, it's my name for the dance you do, blah, blah, blah. So it's clearly my front page. And so I go there, and it's some site in Russia, Croatia or something.
You're so popular, people are usurping your site.
Exactly.
You've made it.
I made it. Thank you. But, you know, I'm pretty sure I know where the Security Tango is and what it is and what's on it. Because it's my site.
Yep.
So, you know, if I see those things, I know to go, yeah, that's not, no. But somebody else might say, oh, I've heard of this Security Tango. My friend told me I should, well, I'll click on that.
Yep.
So it's,
why is it all in Russian?
Yeah, right, exactly.
A couple years ago, it was Norton or McAfee. You know, the big, well-known antivirus program names were being usurped by the bad guys. So instead of Norton Antivirus, it was, you know, Antivirus Plus. Or something like that. So now, nowadays, you've joined the ranks of the big guys.
I have. I'm very excited. I'm very, very excited by this. Not so much as you might think, actually.
No. I'm still digging into the previous caller's multi-compressed zip file, and one of the things that people have reported is that they unplugged a USB flash drive without ejecting it and get that type of message because the system wants that flash drive back.
Oh, interesting.
So when you, Mac or Windows, when you have a flash drive, or any drive for that matter, on Windows you must use the safely remove hardware button, and on the Mac you must use the eject button to tell the computer you're done using it before you physically unplug it from the computer. If you just unplug it from the computer doesn't necessarily know it's gone yet. And in many cases you get an error message about the device was unmounted improperly.
Right.
And you can actually damage the files on that device by just unplugging it because they may not have been fully written yet. One of the ways that USB drives work is they kind of hold things in queue waiting to see if you're going to change them again before they finish writing them to the disk.
Right. Back in the day when computers were much slower.
And you had a, you know, 16K of RAM.
Right. They would cache all of the things you were going to send out to the flash drives and only do it when the machine was idle because it took so much of the processing power. Nowadays, it's unnoticeable, but nobody rewrote the things all over again. So basically, I have watched people pull flash drives out of a computer while the little red light was on.
Yeah.
That tells me right there that drive is no longer good.
And then ignore the message that says you did it wrong.
Yep.
Well, it's never hurt before. You have been really, really lucky.
Exactly. And you're done now.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would say that's certainly a possibility then. If you plug that drive back in, maybe it'll take it. I would think if you rebooted the system, that would do it, but might not. If there's a program waiting to actually do something, it may be stuck in queue.
Can you look to see somewhere what programs are set? Yeah, there's a registry entry.
Right.
You can see what programs are waiting to run at launch. So at a minimum, you can go to your start menu
in the task manager on Windows 10, there's a startup tab.
Right, you can see what programs are set to start up, and it might be in there.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 20 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Some iPhone users reported that they were flummoxed by iOS 10, which failed to install, crippled their devices, and sent them on a hunt for a Mac or PC armed with iTunes. I updated my iPad Pro 9.7 and iPhone 6S, and both devices now requested to connect to iTunes, wrote DJ Tame in a message posted to Apple support forum. Once connected, I got a message that an error had occurred and then restore was necessary. It reverts back to iOS 9.3.5. Another customer was a lot hotter under the collar. This is absolute garbage, Apple, said B. Mattify in a different thread in the same discussion forum. Now when I connect my phone to iTunes, it says it cannot connect to upgrade server. Thanks, Apple. You know, before I switched over to an Apple phone, I had my fair share of problems with Android, but it never, ever completely botched its own upgrade.
That's because there are no upgrades for Android
phones.
That's
right. iOS 10 just totally hosed my iPhone. It's going to be wiped, wrote another unhappy upgrader. Reports of failed over-the-air upgrades were even more widespread on social media, with the Apple support account on Twitter flooded with complaints, many of which were not polite enough to read on the air.
Yep.
We're currently looking further into this issue, Apple support tweeted shortly after 11:30 a.m. on Tuesday, Pacific time on Tuesday. Apple support also directed customers to a page on the firm's website that spelled out how to connect an iPhone or iPad to a Mac or PC to restore the previous version of iOS. Apple said it had identified and fixed the problem, at least for those who had not yet tried to upgrade. We experienced a brief issue with the software update process affecting a small number of users during the first hour of availability, an Apple spokesrobot said. The problem was quickly resolved. Anyone who was affected should connect to iTunes to complete the update or contact Apple Care for help, improperly using the term contact. Upgrade problems are not new or rare for Apple. A year ago, Apple rushed out iOS 9.0.1 to fix several bugs, including one that prevented some from installing the new operating system, which had been released just the week before. And in February, Apple reissued iOS 9.2.1 to fix an error that crippled iPhones whose owners had replaced some parts themselves or had a third-party shop do repairs. Apple support's Twitter account is perhaps one of the fastest ways to ask for assistance, although actually getting assistance will take longer. So how did your upgrade go? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. And that goes right back to what you said earlier about don't be first.
Yep. Don't be first. Just because the update's out there doesn't mean you have to do it right now. Let someone else, especially a big update like this, major changes. You know, when the first digit changes, it's huge.
Right.
Second digit's not so big. Third digit is a fix.
Yeah.
Fourth digit we never read about.
They just roll those up into third digit fixes anyway.
Yeah. When people pay a lot of money for these Apple products, they expect Apple to give them, good service.
Unbelievable.
And when Apple done goofs like they done goofed this time, there are issues.
You know, and we've said before, you can't test every system and you can't test every configuration, but something this big should have been better tested.
And that's one of the reasons I do the public betas. And actually, Tim Cook said that in a interview a couple of weeks ago. Was I think iOS 8, where Apple Maps replaced Google Maps, and the map data was terrible, and people were
driving off cliffs.
Well, don't pay that close attention to your GPS.
Just because the GPS says turn left, don't believe there's a magic Indiana Jones invisible bridge off the cliff.
But because of that problem and the public outrage, Apple started doing public betas. So people that wanted to could download the beta version and report bugs. And it's interesting that there were still these problems with all the millions of people. And that's the problem. There were millions of people in the public beta. There's hundreds of millions of people downloading it.
Right, right. Oh, I get it. Yeah. I do get it. But it just, you know, it's when it's this egregious, you would think somebody caught it somewhere. Particularly since within an hour, they had a fix.
Right.
Well,
and the other side of it, I'm coming from a service standpoint, they told you what to do to fix it.
Yeah. Well, the problem is a lot of people don't use iTunes, or aren't anywhere near into their iTunes machine. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I'm
okay, if you're going to install a major update on your OS, be at home.
Well, but to be fair to them, this is Apple. Apple says they're perfect.
Yeah.
So why should they have to worry about that?
Yeah.
The reality is Apple is not perfect. I hope you were sitting down. I hope you weren't driving.
And all the times they've had problems like this, people still expect perfection from them.
Absolutely. Well, Apple plays themselves up as being perfect.
And they,
that's their image.
Yeah. And they charge the prices that kind of, you know, suggest perfection or close to.
That's exactly right. You know, when I get a problem with my Android OS, essentially that was free. Okay, I get it. I don't like it, but I get it. I'm more willing to say they'll fix it and they'll get around to it. You know, whatever. And I've paid $300 for the phone, and you know it's fine. But when you pay $1,000 for a phone, and suddenly it's now just a brick. That's an issue.
Yeah.
That's an issue that people are going to have. And I get that. I truly do. And Apple just has to learn to live with that because, you know, they tout themselves as perfect and charge prices as if they're perfect. So when they're not perfect, they got to take the hit. That's the way that works. But I agree that Steve is absolutely right. You should not be first. You know, wait an hour, wait a day, whatever it takes.
And as we said, make a backup. So you should have been at home and backed it up to your computer anyway.
Right, right, right. This wasn't one of those updates that you don't get a choice of, right? I mean, it didn't automatically install. You had to the installation.
Yep. Yeah. It'll tell you it's available, and then you have to download and install it.
Right. Yeah. Okay, all right, yes. Then you don't have an excuse. And there are, I suspect there are people who don't run iTunes.
True. Free download for Mac and Windows, though.
Right, so it is a free download.
If you do need to install it, you can.
Right. But there are people who don't have one.
Right.
So I get that they would have an issue. There are people who don't have, who live on their phones and probably haven't booted their computers up in a while.
That's their only computing device now.
Right.
Yep.
So you got to be able to live without iTunes.
Yes.
Because you don't have a machine that runs iTunes.
Yep.
And if you go to somebody else's machine to run iTunes, how do you set that up? Well, you know.
Yeah, because it's going to want to erase your phone to sync it to their computer.
Exactly right.
Which, in essence, is what it has to do anyway when it's bricked like that. It has to erase it.
I understand that, but now it's their computer. It's their phone.
Yeah.
So, how do you handle that? Apple is not terribly transparent about how that works. iTunes, yes, the iTunes iPhone connection just works until it doesn't.
Yep.
And then when it doesn't, it's a real problem. So I get it. It's a, but you know, if you've done the upgrade and it worked, you're in the vast majority, right? Let's not forget, you know, we hear most about the problems. And that's true of every operating system. There are a billion people in the world running an Android OS and never having any problems. There are 100 million people running Windows, iOS and not having a problem on 300 billion devices. But when there is a problem like this, this is what we hear about. We never hear about the no problems. We never hear about the it ran fine today. You know, if you put if you put up a news story that said, you know, 16 billion, whatever the number is, Android users had no problem today, you wouldn't get a lot of clicks on that.
Unless you have a Galaxy Note 7 and you're talking about how it didn't catch on fire today.
Yes,
then that's an entirely different situation. Well, my phone didn't catch on fire today, so you know.
Start a blog, and every day it's just my phone did not catch on fire today. My IED. Disguised as a telephone.
Was that one of your news stories? They went beyond the we'll replace it for you, and now they have to actually do a recall.
Yeah, well, that's the United States has said, no, it's a recall.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk about that one next time. But, yeah, that's going to remain an issue for a while. And, again, this entire thing for them is – the problem, of course, is they sealed the battery. They want to be Apple, right? So they sealed the battery in. My Galaxy S5 has a replaceable battery. I pop off the back, I pop out the battery, I pop in a new battery. It would have cost them, what was the number? 1/25th of what it's going to cost them to replace the phones,
yeah,
or less, to just send out a bunch of batteries. Because that's the only problem. One of their suppliers had a battery problem. One. So, but they've got to replace all of those phones as opposed to just sending everybody out a new battery.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you know, if it fits, it ships, would have been real fast and real convenient. And I get a battery in the mail. I pop the back off my phone. I pop in the new battery. I take the battery, the old battery, and I don't know what I do with the old battery, but I don't recharge it. And Samsung has said that the way they're going to fix this until they can do the recall is they're sending out an update that will only let you charge the phone to 60%.
So you don't overcharge it.
So you can't overcharge it. So the problem apparently only happens when you charge the phone more than 60%.
Which means that there's a circuit in the phone to prevent overcharging that's not working.
It is possible that that is the problem. It is more likely that it is the battery itself, because on the other phones, this is not the issue. Yeah.
So it's right? it's a 2100 milliamp hour battery, but it's really only 15.
Right. Right. Somebody, one of their suppliers, who I suspect is no longer one of their suppliers.
Probably so one of the cells. So most of these batteries have multiple cells in them.
Right.
And so probably one of the cells is failing. And so say there are three cells. The first two cells work. That's 60%.
Yep. And so, yeah, there's, it's going to make some people angry because they have to do it to every phone because they can't. You know, in an over-the-air update, they can't say only this phone from this manufacturer because there's nothing that programmatically differentiates that phone internally from all the other phones, right? So it's a real issue in terms of
well, you would think that they would know the serial numbers of what phones have which batteries in them or would be able to keep track of that somehow.
You certainly would, but if you had to send out an update that had 100 million serial numbers in it, it's an awfully big update, and now we're running up against their data caps again.
And they reply all instead of BCC.
Yeah, right. Right, and they put it all right in the two line. Yeah. The other issue, of course, is when you're talking about updating, the way most phones work, and this is something else the FCC is looking into, by the way. The way most of these phones work, Apple's update directly from Apple. For Android, they go through both Google's vetting and then the hardware manufacturer's vetting, and then the carrier vets it.
Yep.
And in general, that's, of course, so that each of them can add their own software and have a new revenue stream before it gets to you. And that's what we call bloatware. And that's what we call singing the blues. So any of these updates have to go through three vetting processes before they get to you. And frankly, my phone, for example, is behind on Android. I don't have the latest version of the Android OS on my phone. Nougat, I still have Marshmallow. And is that really a problem? Well, yes, because there are security fixes in Nougat that are not in Marshmallow. And Google is saying we're not going to separately send those out, just update the operating system. Because they're inherent to the OS, and it's you know, it's easier to just update the OS. But until Verizon gets through with it and Samsung gets through with it, I don't get the update. And now the FCC is saying, well, you know what? That's all well and good, but now we're talking about security. And that means we're also talking about national security.
Yep.
So we want you to update these in a timely manner. That's why my next phone, I think, is going to be a Nexus phone. No, excuse me, a Pixel phone now. The rumor is that Google is going to change the name of their own brand of phone from Nexus to Pixel. Why? I don't know, but I suspect somebody else owns the copyright to Nexus.
Well, you remember Philip K. Dick's estate sued them because Nexus is the name of the replicants.
There you go.
But I think Google laughed that off way back then. Maybe they finally decided, no, we'll change our name.
Yeah, right, right. It's easier to change it than whatever. And they already had the Chrome Pixel.
Yeah.
And so now the phones will be called Pixels.
So it should be the Nexus Pixel.
Fine, then you're just going to get two people angry at you somehow.
Yeah.
But what we don't know, of course, is the Pixel, Chromebook Pixel, is a very high-end Chromebook, $1,000 Chromebook. The question is, will the Pixel phone also be high-end, or will it be medium or low-end, or you know, multiple versions thereof?
Yeah.
But the beauty there is you get a pure Android experience with nobody else's front end, nobody else's additional software, and sorry, Steve is having a bit of an issue.
The Hangout just died.
With Hangouts. You'll get it directly from Google. You know, once they've billed it and vet that it works on their phones, they will send it out themselves. Now, very much like what Apple does. So that I'm looking forward to that as my next phone. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 40 minutes after the hour. Get Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Longest-running computer show. Back to more Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. The stream is up, but the camera's not working.
And mine came back for a second, and now it's gone again.
How weird is this? We're trying to figure out what our story is with the network running or not running.
We'll figure it out eventually, one of these days.
Doing whatever it's supposed to do.
So if somebody from the school district, networking IT infrastructure, can... Let
us
know.
Give us a call here.
Yeah, give us a call. Why we can't get to Google Hangouts or make secure connections to some websites. It's crazy.
It is crazy. Here's my main camera. I have selected a bit rate. I've selected a very low bit rate in the hopes that that would work.
All right. It said event saved.
Yeah, it says event saved. So I'll hit save changes just in case. Back arrow to the event manager.
And now there should be a... No, that's an old one.
Yeah. I don't know what's happening. New live event. What the hell?
Yeah. So Google keeps changing their options here. So there should be a go live button on that page. I'm thinking because you just started live streaming okay? It's going to take a while for Google to add it.
Yeah, see, now it's still not letting me do anything here. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I really don't. Stream now?
And see, that's the problem with a live broadcast. You know, we can't just say, you know, stop and let's start over again when the stream works.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm here, but it's not, my camera's not working for whatever reason. I don't know why. I either didn't set up a camera or whatever. I set up my encoding software.
See, that's if you're going to do your own encoding. There's a different place you need to go to do live to YouTube. So on the left, that streaming.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not what you want. You want event.
That's the one you pointed me to.
Events is what you want. Oh. And so you're creating an event, and that event should then be able to do stream on air, but you don't have that live start Hangouts on air button that I do on mine.
Okay. I'll see about this. It says Nick Francesco live stream.
Yeah, and there should be a go live now button at the bottom of that window. I'm thinking that it hasn't worked its way through the system yet when you agreed to have the live settings.
Oh, maybe. I don't quite know what's going on with this.
We're not doing our own streaming encoding here. We're just sending the video to YouTube.
And this must be so exciting for everybody.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those cool things that we're...
Master guys, the Soundbites fixed their own problem.
Yeah. Right. Well, you used to have a multi-million-dollar studio to do audio or television broadcasting. And now, you know, you can do it with your computer and YouTube. And a lot of people are in essence creating their own TV stations that way, and doing internet broadcasting. And that's the dangers of violating net neutrality, the dangers of data caps, is that kind of stuff that people want to do. And you know, if there were too many data caps, then Netflix may not have ever existed if they didn't think they could do streaming video. Even YouTube itself. May not have ever existed if data caps were more prevalent back then. So it's very frustrating for people that are trying to create new stuff on the internet and realizing their customers are wary of coming to them because they don't want to run out of their data cap.
Right. Apparently, I don't know what I'm doing. That's where we are. I'm going to delete these. How do I delete them? There they are. Now they're gone. I'm about to delete two videos. Yes, let's delete the two completely blank videos. All right, in the meantime.
No, this go live is if you have your own streaming encoder.
Yeah, I don't have a streaming encoder. let's talk a little bit about the Samsung Note 7. Dave Dynamite Enright owns one. And Dave Boom Boom Enright, that's what we called him last week. Dave Boom Boom Enright.
I can just see him at this reunion walking around on it. All of a sudden, it seems to start smoking and he chucks it away.
Yeah, I said last week people are walking around. You know the Galaxy Note 7 owners? Because they're walking around with their phones held out at arm's length by two fingers as they walk around. Yeah. U.S. regulators have announced a formal recall of the Samsung Galaxy Note 7 after reports of fires caused by faulty batteries. The South Korean tech giant has already launched a voluntary recall after user complaints about exploding phones. According to Samsung, the problem affects 2.5 million devices globally, including 1 million in the U.S., which sounds like a large number, but in fact is a very, 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 very small number. But it's still a million people. The recall comes at a crucial time as rival Apple's just released the new iPhone 7 flagship model. Because this product represents such a serious fire hazard, I am urging all consumers to take advantage of this recall right away, said Elliot Kay, chairman of the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission. Kay said Samsung should not have tried to do the recall by itself, saying anybody who thinks that a company going out on its own is going to provide the best recall for that company, and more importantly for the consumer, needs to have more than their phone checked. So far, Samsung has received 92 reports of batteries overheating in the U.S., including 26 reports of burns and 55 of property damage. according to the commission's website. The company said it would speed up its recall with Tim Baxter, president of Samsung Electronics America, saying that consumer safety is always our highest priority. Samsung has come under fire for its response to reports of battery problems over the past weeks. On 2 September, the firm said it would stop selling the phones and offered to replace the ones already sold. The company last week advised people to stop using the phone. Samsung also said it would limit the batteries of the Note 7 to 60% of their capacity via a software update. But of course, if you stopped using the phone, you won't get the update. The U.S. Department of Transportation, meanwhile, has ordered airline passengers not to bring the phones on planes unless they keep them turned off and don't charge them during the flight. Passengers were even advised against packing the phones into any checked-in luggage. A number of airlines around the globe have also banned the phone from being used or charged on their planes. The phone was launched on August 19th and has been generally well-received by critics and consumers. Still carrying the Samsung IED? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, you knew that this was a large issue when we started seeing videos of vehicles on fire.
Yeah.
The phone isn't, yeah.
Apparently, it can't even delete the events because an error occurred. Okay.
Now I'm not authorized to start the call.
Nice. Very nice. Very, very nice. I don't know what's going on here. Streaming is easier than ever before, by the way.
Yeah, I've been reading that.
Yeah, me too. I'm sure I'm just doing something wrong. And the reason, of course, is I'm not actually paying attention right now because I'm also on the air. So I get that. I do. But yeah, we're having trouble with the stream, and so the video streams. But of course, we're still on the air live, and of course, we're still on the audio stream live. So we're in pretty good shape all the way around for those things. Those of you who are listening, there are still with us, and you've got a few minutes left. You could still give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And I'll tell you, Samsung really does have an issue. They have a beautiful product. They had an exceptional launch. Everything was going their way, clearly going their way. And then this happened, and they then handled it really badly. Not immediately turning around and saying, stop. We're gonna fix this. We're gonna send out everybody a new phone. They waited a while, then they decided to send out the new phone. Then they did it badly, and now things aren't even available. Dave Enright got a notice that said, "Yeah, come down to Verizon and get your phone." He gets the Verizon. The Verizon says, "Yeah, we don't have any phones." So you know, how do you do that? How do you handle that? It's a problem. So I'm not sure at this point what we can do. What they can do about that, but it's too bad that this happened. You know, it's a nice product. It's their flagship product, and that's a problem that Samsung is going to be a long time living down, a long time. All right,
Fortunately, they make a zillion phones. So
yeah, okay. Let's go back to the phones. Our next caller is Craig from Brighton, New York. What's up, Craig?
I have a question. So in terms of setting up home network backup, I have a situation where I have a router, has a USB where I can just connect any old USB hard drive. What are the advantages of setting up a full NAS with a server versus just plugging in
automation,
a large capacity hard drive to the router for backup?
Automation, unless you leave that hard drive in all the time. You've got to remember to plug it in and unplug it at a later point, and you're just human.
And if you have multiple computers, they can all back up easily to the same NAS without needing to unplug the drive from one computer and walking to the other computer.
Right.
And if you do have multiple computers, if you buy a single hard drive for each computer, that's probably going to cost you more than a NAS would.
Oh, but I guess I didn't explain the question. I do have a router on my system at home, and the router itself has a USB where I can connect it. So anybody from the home network.
Oh, it's the same idea. No, it's the same thing. Whether it's still network attached, whether it's attached through Ethernet or USB. So you've done that. That's exactly what you've done.
And then I could just set up demons on each computer to back up Okay. Well, thank
you. Yeah, easy enough. Absolutely. All right. Thanks, Craig. We are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank... wow. My battery just died from... I haven't charged it in 3 weeks. I want to thank Steve Ray. I want to thank Michael Oden, who came in and did yeoman service Dave. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. And we'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.